Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Lost Skills Podcast, where we believe if the women don't find you handsome, they should at least find you handy. Today's episode is episode 41. Today's podcast is going to be on wild edibles, but more importantly, wild edibles that you can identify yourself. But before we get into that, let's talk about a little news and updates. First off, I'd like to mention that I did subscribe for a new iTunes feed for the new podcast site, and I don't know what's wrong with iTunes, but I'm waiting for them. I did it on the 6th, and I still haven't heard nothing from them yet. I'm getting the episodes pretty much caught up. I think I have it scheduled out to post 27 of them now, so I'll be on number 27 by next week. I've been kind of keeping them scheduled a day ahead of time or so when I'm doing them, that way that, you know, there's going to be content every day and other people can find the website. Otherwise, I'm just posting like 6 a day and that doesn't really help me out. But what I'd like to know is, what are your ideas should be about for the website? I was thinking about like putting a photo gallery page in with some of my projects, and if other people wanted to like submit some photos of their projects and put a little write-up and kind of get like a members project page going on, and that would be kind of neat for the site and stuff. I got a couple of projects, but to build a page like that, I'm going to need some more. So if you're interested in doing something like that, send me an email at lostskillspodcast@gmail.com. What I did last week was I was experimenting with, I have an MP3 player at work and it has a record function on it, so I've been kind of messing around with recording you guys a podcast before work. I have like sometimes 5 to 10 minutes before I have to really go inside the building, and I just kind of sit in my car and listen to radio. So I decided to be a little more productive with my time and maybe get you guys out an extra podcast a week, or maybe one extra one every 2 weeks or something like that. But then I had to take my wife in on Thursday to get her wisdom teeth pulled, so I actually did another podcast that day, and I got a whole 20-minute one out that time while I was waiting. I do know that the audio quality on those podcasts won't be as good as the audio quality on this podcast, because I'm sitting in my basement where it's quiet with my computer and a good set of headphones set up. And them MP3 player doesn't have a spot for headphones, so I can't even stick a extra microphone in and use that. I have to use the crappy little microphone on the thing. Another thing I got is I finally got the parts for my old Spravada when the fuel pump took a dump in it. They wanted like $225 for a fuel pump, and I found one online for $68, which was a really good deal, and I finally got it and looked at it, and it was a brand new fuel pump with the whole assembly and everything. And everybody wanted more than double that and the normal parts stores right around my area, so I'll tell you what, it does pay to shop around on the internet. I finally got my olds pushed into the garage, and now I just gotta find some time to drop the gas tank and stuff out. I'll probably do that next Friday and get working on it, so that way we have a vehicle to drive around again. But I think that's pretty much it for the news and the updates part. It was such a nice weekend and everything that we kind of just took the time and played with our daughter outside. And well, my wife really wasn't feeling that great, so she didn't do it a whole lot, but we just kind of enjoyed the weekend and stuff, so we didn't get a whole lot of projects done around here. But anyways, let's get on with the main topic, which is wild edibles that you can find yourself. The first thing is some of these are wild edibles, but they're actually plants that people plant. And some of them have just gone wild, or you can just find them natively around where you are. And the first one I want to talk about is the oyster mushroom. And I know they say that it grows on all kinds of soft deciduous trees like popple, and they grow on oaks and stuff like that, but around in my area, they only grow on the poplar trees, and they only really come out for like 2 weeks before they get some kind of bug, and then it really ravages them, and you don't want to eat them anymore. And probably that they're chewed on ain't going to make a difference, but it's just something that it's just kind of visually not appealing after they get done with it. So, it's in mid-June when these come out. And it says that they grow year-round, but the only luck I've ever had of finding them is mid-June. And a lot of times you could see them right from the road. And they're usually on dead and standing poplar trees, which are like a year or two old. Something that's standing before the bark comes off. And they can be on any size poplar tree, even the 1-inch diameter ones up to the really big ones. But a lot of times you'll find them on smaller ones because as they come up, the other poplar trees take over and some of the smaller and scragglier ones die. And the one good thing about these mushrooms is once you've learned what an oyster mushroom looks like, that you can't mistake it with anything else in North America because there is no other look-alike that's poisonous for this mushroom. When we usually go hunting for them, what I do is I drive down the side of the road in the county forest lands or the fire lane roads. And if I look at really close at the trees, and if I see one, I'll stop the truck. And then when I go over and I cut it off the tree with my knife, I go and I just stop a minute and I kind of do a 360-degree view of wherever I am. Because more than likely, if you find one, there's going to be others on dead and rotten trees around your area. And one time I did that, and oh man, I was like, oh God, I got to get back. I was a long ways from the road by the time I realized where I was, but I knew where I was, so I knew the way back, but it could have been pretty bad, you know. I just kind of wandered off of the bucket and started cutting mushrooms, and all of a sudden, here's my truck sitting out on the road running, and I'm nowhere to be found. But when you hit that certain time of year, the oyster mushrooms, you'll just find tons and tons of them. I've found ice cream pail upon ice cream pail in like an hour. I think my dad said his personal best with a friend of his is they filled up one of them big coolers that hold like two or three cases of beer, and they filled that up in a couple of hours. And they actually took a roof rake with them, and they were pulling the mushrooms down from higher up in the trees. Because a lot of times you'll find them in the tops of the trees where you can't reach them. Or, you know, you get a couple off the bottom and you can look up the tree and they go up the tree about 20 feet. And another mushroom that you can find is a morel mushroom. And actually a morel mushroom comes out probably about 2 weeks earlier than the oyster mushrooms. So I think they come out in the end of May, kind of first week of June, somewhere in there. It depends on the weather and the year and stuff. I've heard of people already finding them this year. But you can find a morel, and they come in a lot of different colors. There's a white, and there's, I think, orange, and then there's black. But if you look at the morels, they do have a false lookalike, which is a false morel. And if you look at a morel mushroom, it kind of looks like what you would imagine like a brain to look like, and it's on a little stem. Now, if you take a morel mushroom and you cut it in half lengthwise, a real morel won't have anything in the stem. It'll be a hollow stem. The false morel will have a solid stem. And if you can find anybody to take you out and show you what morels look like, please do it. I mean, it's definitely worth it. And if you can find someone to take you out to find oyster mushrooms, it's definitely worth it. Once you know what you're looking for, you won't mistake them. Now, with that being said, there's a lot of people that won't take you out looking for these mushrooms in the areas where they go because they don't want to lose their spots, especially morel hunters, because people do sell them to restaurants and things like that, and they do make a lot of money on them, so a lot of people are really wary of giving up their best spot for morel mushrooms. And if you can't find anybody to show you what mushrooms look like, I can't think of the real phrase for it, but there's are like mushroom hunting clubs out there, and if you can look them up on the internet and find one in your local area and join, and they do like walkthroughs in the woods and stuff where they show people where the different types of mushrooms are and what they look like and, you know, when they're good and when they're not, and you can learn a lot from these things. Unfortunately, there isn't one of these in my area that I know of. The nearest one I know of is down by Madison, and I'm not about to drive halfway across the state. So I just kind of pick people's brains, and I know some people that pick some wild mushrooms before. My dad's done it and stuff, so I just kind of learn from other people. Now the next plant is something that grows in a lot of people's backyards, and that's asparagus. You'll find asparagus a lot of times on the sides of roads and stuff, and I don't know why that it decides it wants to grow there, but you can almost always find asparagus on the sides of the road. And I think it's from all the digging and stuff, you know, the soil's fairly loose and all that. But on almost any country road you drive around by my place, you can find asparagus on the side of the road. And asparagus is pretty easily identifiable where the spears come up and you know what they are. I mean, if you don't know what asparagus looks like, just look up a picture of asparagus online and you'll know. You can't confuse asparagus with anything else. There's nothing else that looks like it that could kill you, as far as I know. But a lot of times you'll find them laying around on farmers' fields and stuff, and the best time to find out where they are is in the summertime when people have kind of let them go up to grow by themselves, and then you can kind of mark the spot in your own way, even could tie a ribbon to a tree or something like that. But that's kind of obvious for everybody else. But if you kind of make a mental note of the spot, you can stop there on your way to work or from home or whatever and stop and pick some asparagus on the side of the road. And once you find an asparagus bed in the woods, usually they last from between 15 to 20 years. So you can pick from that spot for a long, long time. It's just important to remember to let some go to seed so that the plant will reseed itself for the next year. So now we're going to talk about a wild edible that grows just about everywhere that anybody can come from in North America and in various parts of the world. And it's something that you'll probably never think of, which is the pine tree. There are a lot of pine trees where there are a lot of parts that are edible. And I know a white pine is a really good one for that. And pine trees, all of them have some edible parts. Almost any pine tree you can go to and find and take a pine cone off of it, and if the pine cone's closed, you can open that pine cone up and you can take the nuts out and eat them, and them are pine nuts. A lot of people pay good money in the grocery store to buy pine nuts whenever they're making something. And you can just go out and get it right off your tree. It's something that's pretty easy to get. I mean, pine cones are almost everywhere. Now, another part that you might not think of is in the spring when the trees get the little pollen heads on them, those are edible. And I think that they can be ground into flour. I'm not exactly sure on that, but I know you can just kind of eat them raw. And it takes a whole lot of them to amount to anything. You'll probably never get full. But it's just something for you to know that the trees are edible that way too. Another source of nutrition on a pine tree is the inner bark. Basically, what you can do is you can take your knife and you can cut into a pine tree and you can dig into the inner bark and pull it out. And you don't want to get into the dead wood, but you want the don't want the outer part either. That's where all the tannins are. So you kind of cut a big chunk of bark off of the tree, and then you take your knife and you cut off the outer bark, and then the part that's the inner part that's kind of just wet and slippery, that's the part you can eat. And you can chew that raw, but I guess it's pretty stringy. But you can also take it and cook it on the fire, and it'll almost get to be like a potato chip. And you should probably split it thinner if it's off of a really big tree, because that piece can get kind of really thick. But that's a good source of nutrition. In fact, there was a tribe of Native Americans that all they did was eat bark when times were tough. And I can't remember what their name was offhand, but their name roughly translated into tree eaters. So that was a main source of nutrition for their Indian tribe. So if the people could live off of it hundreds of years ago, you could live off of it now. It's just something to think about when you kind of see a pine tree sitting out front of your house. And also, you can take that roasted inner bark and grind it into flour. And you can use it as a makeshift flour if you need to make like bread or muffins and stuff like that. I don't know how well it works. I can't attest to it. I've never actually tried it. I've tried baking it, and I thought it wasn't too bad. And then the next part that is edible is actually pine needles. You can make a tea out of pine needles. And if you've watched any survival shows on the Discovery Channel, you've probably seen them take a handful of pine needles and throw it in their cup and throw it on the campfire and make a pine needle tea, which is very high in vitamin C, which is very good for you. I also saw a video on the internet one time where a guy was taking like the very youngest growth off of a tree, like right about this time of year when it just kind of the new growth is like an inch long, and he was taking that and just eating them right off of the tree. And I don't know if that was a bunch of BS and that it actually nourished you or not, or if it was something you could just do and not get hurt by it. So I don't advise that unless you do a little more research. I forgot where I seen the video, so I couldn't really go back to see if the guy was kind of telling the truth or not. Now, the next plant is also a plant that's almost everywhere in plain sight, and nobody really ever thinks of it as a food source, which are cattails. You can take a cattail and you can pull it up, and you get the root, which has a big tuber on it, and you can take that tuber and you can crush it and grind it into a flour, or you can take it and boil all the starch out of it and use it as a thickener for soups and other things. Or if you were really hungry and really bad off, you could just drink the starch-laden water and you would have plenty of nourishment. Now, if you go and find a young cattail, and cattails, they propagate by advancing with the tuber, or they can actually go from seed, but a lot of times the tuber will just come out of the ground, kind of like a quack grass will. And you just grab the new plant, and you just pull on it and pull it out of the ground. And then there's a very white, nice part on the very bottom is really clean. That's the part that you can eat, probably about 3 or 4 inches. The rest of it's too rough and woody to chew, but that little part is nice and tender. And also the male part of the plant, the pollen, when it's out certain types of the year, is also edible. And I know people have took that and they kind of mash it up and made like a makeshift flour out of that also. Now, there are some disadvantages to cattails. A lot of times they're found alongside the roads and stuff, and I don't know, maybe that's not the best place to eat them from because there's runoff of motor oil and maybe gasoline and, you know, rubber from tires and stuff that go in the ditches. I don't know if I'd personally eat it myself out of the ditch alongside the highway, but maybe a ditch off of a back road or something like that where there ain't a lot of traffic and stuff. Or if you just go out to a nice marsh and you can find them there, where they'll be a lot cleaner than the ones you'll get off the side of the road. Now, there's also another plant that is a lookalike to a cattail. Now, when you see it, you can notice a difference almost immediately. The cattail, when you pull the stem up, kind of grows in like a circle around itself, almost like a palm tree, and it kind of grows around and then it leafs out. Where the other lookalike plant, and I can't remember the name, but it almost looks like a fan shaped. It's more narrow. It's not very round where it comes out of the ground. So that's the way to tell the difference between the two. And I think that the lookalike one, if you take a bite out of it after you pull it up out of the ground, it has a bitter taste where a cattail does not. And right now I just like to take a minute after I made that statement to say that this is just kind of a show to get you into the idea that there are edible foods all around you, and if you're going to decide to pursue some of this, do some extra research. I'm not a know-it-all on any of these subjects by any means, and please don't go out and do something without knowing exactly what you're doing. Now, with that being said, I think I'll do one more and then probably close up the show for the day, and maybe I'll do a part two or part three on this. But there's also a gooseberry bush, which is, it basically looks like a small tree, 2 to 4 feet tall. It has prickly branches. They have like spikes on them. And they're found in bottomlands and open slopes and openings in the forest. And they can be eaten raw or cooked. And I actually did plant a few gooseberry bushes in my yard, and one of them died, but one of them took. And they're very small when you first get them, so they're an easy plant to overlook when you're walking through the woods. But if you see them, they're supposed to be very good. They're kind of almost like a sour grape. I'm not exactly sure what they taste like yet, but that's what I heard. So I'm still waiting for mine to make a little production for me. And this year is apparently the time when it's supposed to make production, because it takes a year from when you plant it in the ground, according to the people I bought it from at the nursery. I guess I'll have time to do a couple more. A currant. It's a bush 2 to 4 feet tall like the gooseberry, but no pickers. The fruits grow in elongated clusters and can be eaten raw or cooked. They grow in the same habitat as a gooseberry, so they're pretty much right around in the same area. And then there's the elderberry. It grows to a height of 10 feet as a tree. It's got broad clusters of flowers that are white, and the fruits can be purple to black. They grow on edges of swamps and along roadsides. And then there's the American cranberry. It grows on a bush 8 to 12 inches tall. It has wiry trailing stems that hold pink flowers and red berries and can be found in meadows and bogs. And it blooms June to October and can be eaten raw or cooked. So I think I'll finish this up right here and kind of give you guys my final thoughts. I think that it's a really good thing to know some of the wild edibles in your area. And, you know, not necessarily for the whole if I get in a survival situation kind of thing. Although that is definitely a good reason to know these plants. But the other reason is why not supplement your food with something that nature has provided for you? I mean, people used to do it all the time, and right now people don't do it. I think it has to do with our way of life, where when we go walking out in the woods, and people go hiking and stuff all the time, but nobody really goes and walks through the woods anymore. They just kind of run through at a fast pace, just like the rest of life. When you go foraging for these types of foods, it forces you to slow down and kind of take in nature, and you know, you just kind of take your time and you find everything, and it's a really relaxing experience. I can guarantee you that. If you go out and start doing this, you'll definitely be a lot happier with your life. And what I would suggest is that you start out small with something like this. You know, learn a couple of plants and get really proficient with them. And then find a couple more plants and then, you know, keep going from there and there. And if you want to look up a good resource on YouTube, there's a YouTube channel called Eat the Weeds from a guy named Green Dean. And I think every time he does a video, it's about a different type of plant that's edible. And he's a pretty good source of information on what's edible and what's not. And in the video form, I know YouTube's kind of grainy and stuff sometimes, but you can get a general idea. And then maybe you can do a little more research on your own with pictures and stuff off of the internet. So those are pretty much my thoughts on getting out and going and doing some foraging. But in the end, after all this, you have to remember one thing. If you don't use the skills you've learned, you're eventually going to lose them. So get out there and do a little practicing, and then if, you know, the times ever do get tough, you know exactly what to do. Learning a few wild plants and learning how to cook them or what to use them for definitely won't hurt you now, and it won't definitely hurt you when times get tough. So it's just something to think about, and next week I think I'm going to continue on with a part two. Or maybe it'll be the week after or something. So, this is Jeff Radke signing off. And until next time, keep your stick on the ice.